Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Justine Rutolo. I'm also known as Miss ADD. I want to welcome everyone to the program today. And before I bring on Chris, and we're going to talk about medication and the first step in really getting better, which is self-awareness, which we're going to explain the process to everybody who's listening, I want to just remind everyone who's in the Los Angeles area that I have two adult support groups that I run through CHAD, Children and Adults with ADD. I'm on the board at CHAD in the South Bay. So the first group I want to talk about is in Torrance, California. That group has been around for 5 years now, which is hard to believe because it went by so fast. Have a lot of growth going on in that group. Had four of my members do a panel at the CHAD Speaker Series, which was this past Thursday, and that went very well. A lot of people impressed with all the growth that these people are having. So the group in Torrance is located at 2785 Pacific Coast Highway at the Center for Learning Unlimited, and that's a school that is dedicated to ADHD and autistic spectrum. And that group is Wednesdays from 7:30 until 9, Wednesday night. And then the next group is in Culver City, and that group has been going on since the last week in June. And it's moved, we've moved it because we could no longer be in the building we were at for free. So we are now at the Share building, and the address is 6666 Green Valley Circle in Culver City. And that group is on Thursdays, and it's a little earlier. It's from 6 to 7:30. So those of you on the west side of town, please come over to Culver City. And if you want to come to Torrance as well, that's great. It's a wonderful group. That group as well is just as good as the one that we have going on in Torrance. A lot of growth, a lot of learning happening in that group. So we welcome everyone who would like to come. So without further ado, I'm going to bring Chris on the line. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Justine.
How are you?
I'm doing fine, thank you. And how are you?
I'm good, thanks. I'm so glad that you're back again. I think this is going to be a very interesting topic. So let's start off with medication. And if you would talk a little bit about the whole process of how you got onto meds and how it's been for you and where you're at with it.
Sure. So going back to my diagnosis in April, I believe it was, of 2011.
Right.
Once the diagnosis had been made, it was then a hunt and search for the right med. Fortunately, I didn't go through different types of meds. I started with Vyvanse, and my psychiatrist started me on the high end. I think it was 70, and it was too much. My system couldn't handle it. It was just creating problems. So brought me down, and then what I continually did was work myself lower and lower until I wasn't feeling the effects. And at which point I stopped, went back up, and I've been holding right now at 40 for some time. But that process of kind of dialing it in took about a year.
Right. So they call that, titrating. So for those of our listeners who don't know medication, let me just run through a little bit about it. Stimulant medication is usually the medication of choice for people with symptoms of ADHD. And many times what I notice is that people with the big H, like you say, Chris, you know, the hyperactivity and impulsivity,
oh, yeah,
they usually feel the effects of the stimulant more so in a positive way than the inattentive type. I'm not saying that people with the inattentive type can't benefit from it, but what I've noticed, especially in my own family, because my older son was hyperactive, my younger son inattentive, he really didn't like the way the medication made him feel. It flatlined him, is the way he used to tell me it made him feel. And I've noticed that a lot in kids and adolescents that I work with, and even some adults. So it's a process of trying to play with, as Chris said, the medication. But so there's Ritalin, that's a stimulant, been around for many, many years. And Ritalin on its own, the regular Ritalin, is short-acting. And depending on your metabolism, it can last anywhere from, you know, 1 to 4 hours. Sometimes it's 2 hours, depending on your metabolism. I have one of my clients who has been on Ritalin, is now going to go on to one of the extended release. And it was only lasting for him a couple hours.
That was one of the advantages of being on the Vyvanse, and it was one of the that was the, I think, overarching reason that my psychiatrist had picked that one, was Vyvanse is I believe one of the few all day medications, so that it's not a having to remember to take a pill several times a day, but I would take the pill in the morning, and then that would last the course of the day. So, and I've got
right.
a high metabolism, so I burn before the end of the day, fortunately, but still, in that case, that was one of the advantages of starting with that and then staying with that. Because even when I was having difficulties in the beginning, instead of going to another medication, he said, no, we'll work with this one, because I wasn't having any adverse reactions to it.
Right.
So it was
right.
just a matter of getting it, you know, to where I was able to, everything was in balance. So, it took a little while, but it was definitely worth the trial and error, and I'm in a much better place. And then the second part of the topic, the self-awareness would not have been possible without it. So.
Right. So I just wanted to go through the meds a little bit, because there are people that don't know anything about them. I'm not a psychiatrist, but because I've been doing this, you know, for 21 years, I've had a lot of experience, not only in my own family, but with my clients. So I just wanted to go through. So there's regular Ritalin, and then there's long-acting Ritalin, which is called Concerta. And that comes in, again, different doses, 18, 27, 36, 54. And it depends on, like you were saying, Chris, how much you can handle, how it makes you feel. I think sometimes what happens is people go on these stimulant medications and it's not the right one, because, as you know, I'm sure you've heard this, that they don't all work for everybody. Like, for example, I know people who, my son, who is my older son, who is very hyperactive with the bipolar as well, he got sick on Vyvanse, couldn't handle it. So this is why I'm telling everybody that there's different kinds out there. There's Adderall, and Adderall is either the regular short-acting, and then there's the longer-acting. That's the one I was on when I used to be on the medication. I was on 30 milligrams of long-acting, or XR, extended-release Adderall, which worked very well for me. The short-acting was too intense. I couldn't handle it. When I would come off, I kind of turned into the Tasmanian devil, because I just was so angry and feeling very frustrated, low frustration tolerance. And that's one of the side effects for all of these stimulants, is how we come off of them. And then there's drugs like Focalin. That's another, can be short-acting or long-acting medication. There's something that not many people are familiar with, and that's Daytrona, which is a patch that you actually just slap on in the morning, and you can do it in different milligrams. It goes from 5 to 30. I have a couple of clients, younger clients, who are on that, and they're on it because they couldn't take the pill. They couldn't handle the way it made them feel. So they went on that, and it's working beautifully for them. So, again, that patch may not work for you or for me when I was on meds, but it works for them. So, as Chris was saying, when you go to the psychiatrist, start playing with different medications. If he puts you on one and it doesn't work, you know, let him know right away so that you can get back on, start something else, or maybe you have to titrate up or down to see how you're feeling. But nobody can tell you how you feel. you know yourself. As you know, Chris, you knew yourself. You knew,
right,
this is working for me.
Quick question, of the medications you ran through, several of which, Adderall and whatnot, I'm familiar with, but the last couple, are those also stimulants?
They're stimulant medications,
okay.
Yes, Focalin and Daytrona. Now, for non-stimulant, there's Strattera, which the clinical trials on that was done at NYU, and I want to say probably about 15 years ago. I haven't seen many of my clients have success with Strattera. There are some people who say that they have had success with it. It also has an antidepressant in it at the same time. So it kind of hits the norepinephrine and the serotonin, which are two chemicals in the brain. And, you know, the only client I've ever seen that had any kind of positive effect with it, which was a gentleman that I was seeing years ago who was had Asperger's, and it seemed to open him up. So, again, individualized, because this is not like taking Tylenol for a headache. This is very, very different. And it can be frustrating at times, but for me, it took me a while because I was on Ritalin at first and then Concerta. That was not working for me. Adderall was the thing that worked for me. So I just want everybody to be aware that there are different meds out there, because everybody always hears about, Adderall and Ritalin. Vyvanse, by the way, is a combination of Adderall and Ritalin. And I've noticed a lot of my clients that have switched over to Vyvanse have done very well with it. So it's the only one, by the way, that is non-addictive, the way it's broken down in the body, which is a good thing. Are you there?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Taking it all in.
Okay.
The Vyvanse, another thing that was brought to my attention was that because of the addictive nature of it, because it's a controlled substance and because there was a tendency to abuse the stimulants, Vyvanse doesn't actually take effect until it hits your digestive system. So it's
right.
Not like
that's
you can open the pills up and convert it to something that can be used to make an illicit drug. You take
right.
it digests in your system, and as a result of that, it takes about an hour for it to kick in and work, but it's for me, it's not a problem because I get up in the morning and take my pill so that when I'm, on my way to work or at work is when it's taking effect. But just it's another option for those that are out there. And another thing I wanted to just throw out real quick is, in addition to that, I have a thyroid problem. I have hypothyroidism, so I
okay.
take a thyroid stimulant. And I was on and have been on the generic form of Wellbutrin, Biafran, I believe it's called, for the better part of a decade. So that also had to be taken into account when, as he was going through the medications, looking at, okay, well, what are the things that are available based on what you're already taking and my physical condition, everything. So, and again, for me, the Vyvanse worked very well. Different people, different situations, I imagine, are going to come up with different, and especially with substance abuse, I think want to shy away from, because that was one of the questions my psychiatrist asked me, any problems with addiction? No. Why? Well, because the stimulants, like you had said, they have that quality to them, so they want to
right.
try and avoid, I don't want to say avoid, but they're just careful about how they apply the medication or the treatment to the individual. And
right.
mine did a pretty good job.
And so let's talk about Wellbutrin for a moment, because it's probably the only, I guess you could call it an SSRI, but it doesn't have the side effects, and an SSRI like Prozac or Zoloft or Lexapro, they are really true serotonin drugs that will help with depression and anxiety. Wellbutrin, they started to give years ago, not only for the symptoms of depression, but also for the symptoms of ADHD, because in some people it can really help them to focus. But here's something that I do know, and again, I'm not a doctor, but I did get this information from a very good source, a very good psychiatrist that I know very well, that the generic form of Wellbutrin does not work as well as the name brand Wellbutrin. Something in how they're making it, that it's not really doing the same, the right kind of job. So I just wanted people to know that. Again, I got that from a very good source. And I think it's important to know when you go to get the drug that you should probably ask for the name brand of Wellbutrin.
So just a quick, to really reiterate that point, but in a different situation, stated I have hypothyroidism. Earlier this year, as you recall, I got sick. And
yeah.
one of the contributing factors to that was that I am taking a generic form of the, and I can never remember which one's which.
Synthroid.
It's either
Synthroid
and levothyroxine. One's the
okay.
generic form, one's the non. But with generic medications are allowed to have a threshold that's much greater than the base medication. So it can be 80% as effective or 120% as effective. There's a 20% plus or minus, which gives you a 40% overall threshold of change. And in my case, I was taking one that was too low. And the thyroid is really sensitive, I found out, to even minute changes. A 5% change in the medication will have a pretty big change. So in the case, as you were saying, with the generic form of Wellbutrin, Bioprin, you can have an 80%. They can legally manufacture it 80% effective, and you're not getting the same effect as you would be if you were on Wellbutrin straight up.
Right.
It's not to say that all manufacturers do that, but knowing how they do business today, they're cutting corners at every opportunity. So, and my doctor's been pretty mindful about keeping me on the non-generic form for my thyroid so that I don't have this issue again.
So that's good. That's really good information, because I'm sure I didn't know this. I didn't know any of this. I mean, I, you know, happened to be hanging out in this world, so I got this information through the process of osmosis, a lot of it, but, you know, it's very important, I think, for parents, especially with kids, and just to kind of ask the question of the psychiatrist, you know, for yourself, for your adolescent, for your child, you know, can I get this in generic form, or should I get this in name brand? You know, I know that, for example, Vyvanse is too new, so there isn't a generic form yet, but there is a generic form of Adderall, which I had been using very successfully for years without a problem. You know, I don't know for other people. I think it just depends on the brain, the sensitivity to the medication, all that.
Another thing that I could add on there, I had a coworker at work approach me this past week, and as you know, I'm obsessive-compulsive about keeping my space clean. So he was having difficulty with not necessarily keeping his area clean, but on keeping on top of things. And we attend staff meetings together, and he saw that, you know, I carry the journal with me and taking notes and whatnot. And so he approached me, and we had a talk, and he ended up coming over yesterday, and we had about a two-hour discussion in which I found out he was diagnosed with ADHD. And I was surprised because to look at him, I think it's ADD, because to look at him, he's not the hyperactive type, but we talked for that time. A lot of things came out that were indicators. We paralleled in a lot of ways. He was being put on medication, and I want to say it was Adderall. He was waiting on the prescription to be filled yesterday. And as I was talking over my own story, my own experiences, one of the things that came up that I had one of those aha moments was when I went on the meds, I was having reactions to things that being in the middle of it, I could not see.
Having people
who are keeping an eye on you while you're doing it, and that's what I recommended to him. He's got his wife and his son at home. He's got other coworkers at work. I don't work with him real closely, but he has other coworkers he can approach and say, hey, can you kind of give me an idea? You know, I'm starting a new medication. If you start seeing anything out of the ordinary for me, it would be greatly appreciated if you'd point it out. Because in my case, I did not do that. And if my then wife was telling me, I don't know that I was being receptive to what she was saying. And as a result of that, you know what the outcome is. I ended up in divorce because I that and a number of other things. But just having that third or having that outside perspective of somebody who's saying, you know, you're starting to really be obnoxious, or you look like you're tired all the time. You know, it affects different people in different ways. But being in the middle of it, we often don't know that because you can't see it. You're sitting in the middle of it. It's like anything else. Having that outside objective perspective is helpful. So that was the one good thing out of the 2 hours that we talked about yesterday that hopefully you will benefit from, and others listening to me as well.
And I think that can also go, it goes in tune with what we're going to talk about next, which is self-awareness. But we have Tom Nardone, who wants to speak to us, ask us a question. Is he on? Hi, Tom. Yeah.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are
Christine?
You?
Good.
Good, and this is Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Hello, Tom.
Hey. Here's a question. What is St. John's wort? Somebody told me that you could take St. John's wort.
Okay, St. John's wort, I used to take it, believe it or not, is more for depression and a little bit of anxiety. But I used to take a very concentrated form of it years ago. They stopped making it because they said it was a little dangerous. But
I didn't even know they quit making it.
Well, they stopped making the one I was taking, which was very, very concentrated. But you can still use St. John's wort, and it depends on the person how much of a benefit you're going to get from it. But it's all natural. So, you know, it really can't hurt you, I guess. I don't know why they stopped making the concentrated form. But, you know, if it works, it works very well. But it depends on the person.
I've not used it. I just heard there was somebody said that you could take it for ADHD, but then I've also heard that there was something about it that was bad for you, like so many things in life that are good.
Yeah. I have never heard of it being prescribed by anybody for ADHD. The only thing I've ever heard of it being prescribed for was depression, and maybe it touches anxiety a little bit, and not severe depression. But, you know, the kind of roller coaster depression where you go up and down. That's the only way. I don't know. Maybe nowadays they're using it for ADHD, but I've never heard of that.
Okay. I was just wondering.
Yeah. Do you take it?
No, I've never. When you guys, I was just listening to you guys talk, and I remembered somebody talking to me about St. John's wort they used to work with. He goes, why don't you just take St. John's wort? And I'm like, you know, I don't know, and I don't hear about it mentioned much, you know, anymore. But I had just thought of it for a long time. But I've never heard of it, you know, in any of the circles that I, you know, travel, read, or you know, or any of that. I've never not heard anybody ever mention it.
No, and I've never heard of it for ADHD. Definitely for depression symptoms, but that's it. Other than that, no. And you take Adderall, so.
No, of course, every day.
Yeah.
I'm on
yeah.
it now.
Yeah. Great. See? And it helps, right?
Yeah. It changes everything. But I get that, you know, it's never been addictive for me. I mean, I guess it can be for others. I'm sure it can if you know. But I can't imagine. I mean, having been taking it for 13 years, I don't know what it is that's addicting about it. I mean, I've never had any kind of, you know, feeling of euphoria after having taken it, other than just not being pissed off about every person that speaks to me, but which is kind of awesome. But I just don't need to take a half a jar for that. I mean, one pill usually does it. If not, I
right.
just
and you know,
do some.
I don't know if you have an addictive. If you have, like I say, addiction begins with ADD. I don't know if you have an addictive personality, but I do know that there are many people who do have that addictive personality, and for some reason, that regular Adderall, not the XR, but the regular, is
mm-hmm.
very, very intense. It can kind of give them that intense feeling that addicts look for. And that's why, as Chris was saying, his psychiatrist's first question was, is there any history of addiction? And, you know, Chris said no. But for some people, I have a client who this is happening to right now. He refuses to get off the Adderall, and I can see that he's taking it more than he needs it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, you know, I forget to take it sometimes, which, you know.
We've all been there.
You know, if you're, I mean, yeah, but, you know, a junkie doesn't forget his, you know, it's
right.
not something that, you know, an alcoholic doesn't forget to have a drink. You know, it's like,
right.
I get that other people can be addicted. I'm not saying I don't believe it. I'm curious as to what I don't get what the high would be. I mean, and when I do take it, it's just like I all of a sudden realize, hey, I'm actually in a decent mood.
Yeah,
must
but you know what, though,
in.
For you, okay, and for me, for people who truly have ADHD, when we take a stimulant, we don't get revved up. We start to slow down and focus and get in a better mood. But then there are people out there who may be borderline, you know, on the lower end of the spectrum with ADHD. And so they take the Adderall and they get all revved up.
So let me jump in real quick because I can. So at the time that I saw my psychiatrist, I told him that I was not, did not have addiction problems. However, as you know, Justine, over the course of time, I found that, well, that may not be the case. And it may run in the family. Well,
right.
What happened was when I started taking the Vyvanse and he put me on the 70, that feeling that you talked about, that being revved up, I was there. I was taking so much that I got what I needed to get my executive function working, and I got a little bit more, which was I was having that euphoric feeling. And if you're on the right dosage, which I'm at now, you don't have the euphoric feeling. It's just your brain wakes up and you go, oh, well, let's start our day and go about our business, as opposed to jump from thing to thing. So in Tom's case, I think the reason why you have a little trouble maybe connecting with what that addictive thing is because your medication's dialed in really well. And again, your psychiatrist or your doctor did a good job in setting that up for you.
Yeah, I suppose that's probably true, Chris. One day this past week, you know, I came in and I was thinking of excuses I could possibly, you know, justify leaving, you know, work without, you know, just like an hour, not even an hour into my shift. So I said, okay, well, maybe I just need to take my Adderall. Well, I did that and like nothing happened, you know. So I took another one, and of course, then I'm back on, you know. So.
Mm.
I mean, every now and then it'll just—I don't know—I just call it a misfire, but
yeah.
It just does. It does nothing. Every now and then it just does nothing. Normally it's, you know, it's fine. You know, I mean, like there's something I'm especially, you know, and that's at work for irritability. Now at home, if I'm writing something, I'll get like a paragraph into it, and I'm just like, oh, this is crap. This isn't even a story, and I'll just close my laptop. Then I realize. You know, I haven't taken my Adderall. And then, you know, within about 20, 30 minutes, you know, I'm right on it, you know, and it's like, it's perfect, you know.
Hey, let me ask you something. Do you ever notice that when it doesn't, the one pill doesn't work, do you ever notice that maybe you didn't sleep well the night before? Or, because sometimes that's what I used to notice is I would get up kind of on the wrong side of the bed. And maybe it was because I wasn't sleeping soundly. I didn't recognize that, but I'd take This is when I was on medication. I would take my pill and, like, kind of nothing would happen. And then I'd say, like, okay, what am I going to do? Because, like, I can't take two of these because they were 30 milligrams. So do you think that has anything to do with it?
Well, you know, when that happens, I do sort of review. And you know, it's not out of the norm for me to not have a good night's sleep. I mean, I just sort of go to bed when I feel like it. I hate sleeping anyway because it's like there's just so many things I'm doing and into doing. You know, I mean, whether it's my blog or games or whatever. Or you know, possibly some of the things I have to do to my house that, yeah, they'll probably get done someday. But anyway, so the lesser important things. You know, I don't like sleeping. But I realize at some point I have to. But I have gone to, it's funny you mention this, because I've gone to work with no sleep. Okay? Just stayed up the whole night, went in the next morning, and I feel great. I'm in a great mood all day. It's a wonderful, I mean, and without even taking my meds. But I think about what I ate. But sometimes, you know, yeah, but I'll have a good night's sleep. I say, did I eat anything last night that might have had, like, some protein in it or something? Yeah, and it's like, well, this makes no sense. So I don't really, I mean, it could be that I'm just, you know, so, you know, out of it that it just took two to get things going that day. I mean, I'm just speculating. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm trying to figure out if there's any answer to it, but there probably isn't.
Well, also had the same type situation where I'll take one of the Vyvanse pills and I'm not feeling it, kind of thing. And what I've found is more often than not, it's not for me. It's not sleep, but it has to be my general state of mind. If I'm if I'm struggling, you know, if there's a stressors in my life, that is more often than not the trigger for it, you know, because my mind has been so preoccupied with something, it stays in that place, and it doesn't want to, like, come out of it. So I don't generally take a second pill, because going back to the days when I was taking too much, I'm just a little hesitant to do so.
Right.
Now, hey, Chris, have you ever decided that you're not going to take your medication for some reason? Like, you just decided... You didn't take your medication because you make a decision that you weren't going to take it.
There have been a couple of occasions when I've done that. Generally, it's because I'm in a place where I think I, for example, I've forgotten the pill. You know, in the afternoon I take it about between 2 and 4, depending on when I take it in the morning. So if I hit, like, 4 o'clock and I should have taken it at 2, I'll think about it and go, well, I'm still focused, I'm still clear, I'm okay. I take 2 pills a day. So my second pill, I'll bypass it altogether. Because ordinarily, by then my meds have burned through. There have been occasions on the weekend I don't take them. Not necessarily just because for any particular reason, I don't. It's been few and far between, because I find that those days that I don't do that, I've got about 15 projects at the end of the day that are half finished. So, doesn't work out.
Yeah. And same way, if I wake up late, you know, or maybe like on the weekend, if I wake up late, yeah, I may only get one for the day. But no, I mean, like, I'll give you an example about refusing to take it. Now, I got up and I went into work, and so quickly into the shift, somebody did something, or I was told that something was going to happen tonight that had to be done. And, you know, for whatever political reasons going on at work, like whether, you know, my boss was supposed to do it, now he's putting it off on me and I'm supposed to get it done, whatever, for whatever reason it might be. I just get so – I'm already irritable because I haven't taken my meds. And because I usually take it when I get to work, just a few minutes after I clock in and, you know, say my, hey, how you doings and all that. But there have been days that I have just gotten so pissed off the minute I walked in the door that I just looked around and I thought about taking my meds. And I said, you know what? These stupid people, they don't deserve me on my medication. So they're only going to get the unmedicated Tom Nardone, because they are not worthy of the things I am able to do for them when I am medicated. And I just out of spite, did not take my medication.
Had that worked?
Have you ever done that?
Well, No. As a matter of fact, it's just the opposite. When I go in there, I'm serious. It's just the opposite. When I go in there and things are not going well, you know, and I know I'm getting ready to have, you know, one of those really bad days. And the reason for it has nothing to do with my coworkers. The hell with them. It has to do with the stress and anxiety that I'm going to feel if I don't take my medication. So being in a better place, you know, even if things don't go well, that's fine. I'm not going to internalize it. If I don't take my meds, I'm much more prone to feel anxiety. And then I kind of take it that you'll tell people what you think. I'm far more prone to just come off and tell people what I think. And my vernacular may not be so well appreciated as such. So, no, I definitely would not do that for just that reason.
A little different, yeah.
Yesterday, oh, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that everybody has, you know, their stuff and different reasons for doing things or not doing things, and it's just different.
Our own strategy.
Yeah, their own strategy. Yeah, so what happened at work yesterday?
I had my review.
Yeah.
At work, and, it was yesterday. Anyway, so I'm having this review, but before the review, my boss had come in on his day off. He's a department head for my department. And he says, "Hey, Tom." And I said, "Man, I looked at the schedule. Man, you're not supposed to be here today. What are you doing?" He goes, "Oh, I came in to give you a review." He said, you want to come with me and get your review?" I said, "Well, no. Can you just give me the piece of paper and let me sign it? We don't have to go through the review." He goes, "Well, why don't you want to go through the review?" And I said, "Are you really want me to answer the question? I can't tell you, Gil." And I wanted to tell him, you know, but I couldn't tell him. I mean, but he said, "No, I want to know." I said, "Okay, here's the thing. Because I don't really know if it's good or bad, and I don't really care. But the thing is, I don't want to listen to you explain it for 30 minutes. Because that would by far outweigh any bad review that it could possibly be." See,
and what did he say?
He said, "Well, you got it." So I went and had it. And, you know, it was a great review.
Oh, see?
It was a really good. Yeah, I know. It was a really good review. So, anyway.
That's awesome.
And me and him
me and Gil
are friends. And I wouldn't say it to anybody, but he's a good guy, you know. And I wasn't ready for it that day. I just didn't want to, you know, didn't want to hear
it. Well,
you
were honest, which is a good thing. That's great.
Yeah.
I like that.
But then
that.
It was awesome because, you saw the picture with they had the fire safety.
Oh,
day,
I love
so
that. Yeah,
I just
that was
had
great.
To, so all I had to do was hang outside all day and watch the kids build ambulances, so nothing to it.
Which was fun for you.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, we talked about
it. I did take my Adderall, but it was a waste of an Adderall because I didn't really need it that day.
Okay, well, we're going to continue on with the rest of the show. So, Tom, is there something else you want to share?
Nope, that was it.
Okay. All right, listen, thank you so much for calling in.
Pleasure to speak with you both. All right,
take care. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
So, you know what, it's interesting about St. John's wort. For those of you who are listening who have used St. John's wort for ADD, please call in at 917-889-7025. Okay, and I really thank Tom. He's always fun to have on the show for calling in. So, Chris, let's get on to self-awareness, because I think this is something that a lot of people want to know about. So we started talking about medication, and I think for both of us, being on medication when we first became self-aware was paramount. So can you talk a little bit about how it helped you?
Sure. As I stated earlier, between you and I, I believe it was paramount. The medication was paramount to self-awareness.
Right.
Because my brain was operating at capacity, but not processing information in a useful way. And like in Tom's case, where he just stated, you know, his boss is going to give him a review and he just didn't want it. I was in the same way. I was like, people were giving me information. I was in denial. I was saying, I don't want it. I don't want to hear about it. And it wasn't until the medication kicked in the executive function of the brain that I started becoming a little more critical of my own actions, behavior, how people perceive me, not necessarily because I wanted to please them, but if everybody around you is seeing something that I don't see, I think that warrants a little further investigation. But with one of the things that had not been brought up to me until after I'd been on the meds for a little while was they said, we're going to put you on the stimulants and it's going to get your executive function going. However, it also affects the rest of the brain. So that part of my brain that was making rash decisions has also got a little bit more of a boost to it. But the executive function is there to counter it in a way that it hadn't been previously. So there's still a little bit of a, I would call it a struggle, whatnot. But I don't know how to describe it. I recall, and I was describing this to my coworker yesterday, I recall the first pill that I ever took, and I went to work, and I had a journal at that time as well, and I was taking notes throughout the course of the day, and it is the most calm, it was a calm that had come over me that I didn't know, I was not familiar with, and a level of awareness external to me. I would hear people talk, for example, and realize, I would realize that when they're talking, and especially about themselves, I could infer things about what they were saying in a way that I could never do that before. For example, one of my coworkers, who, this was years ago, who was sitting behind me, would talk about money a lot. And it was just a nuisance. But what I'd come to realize fairly quickly was this individual had fear surrounding money. And I had never thought about that. And I'm sitting here looking at other people going, wow, this is what I'm seeing. And I can't, within a month, 2, 3, 5 months, something, somewhere in there, started turning that inward and going, ooh, yeah, I'm not really this nice person that I think I am. I'm not being as forthright with people as I think. And as the years went on, that's when, ooh, so I am a controlling SOB and so on and so forth, because those things are much harder to see, especially in oneself. But it would not have been possible without the medication.
So for everybody who's listening, let me give you a definition of self-awareness. It's the ability to step outside of yourself and witness behaviors that may be causing you and others discomfort. In addition, it is listening to people in our lives who point out behaviors which are causing trouble in our relationships. And finally, developing the insight to determine if what they are saying is true. So what I heard you say, Chris, which is very similar to as I started this whole self-awareness process, is I began to see things about myself and how the behaviors controlling, for example, were affecting other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then as time went on, I began to hear these things from other people. And it was very difficult to take that stuff in. And I have to be honest, I think if I wasn't on medication and wasn't emotionally regulated when I was hearing these things, I'm not sure I would have really been able to have seen them in the correct light.
Yeah, very much like you. I was being told things in the past that I was not willing to hear. I can't explain it other than something happened within my brain that where I was able to take a deeper look. It wasn't just looking at it superficially going, well, they say this and I don't feel that, so therefore it's not, and they're wrong. It's more an issue of, okay, well, I've heard this from this individual and something very similar from another individual, and my own feelings in this area are this, and there are too many coincidences to dismiss. So
right.
Take it another
right.
level. And For example, it's probably the thing that got me through really some of the absolute worst times during the divorce, because I was still going through treatment. I was still coming to, that's when I was still coming to the group in Torrance very regularly. And it was still that opening of the book. It doesn't open overnight. And it's chapter by chapter, finding more and more about myself.
Right.
But near the end of the divorce, I was really being honest with myself in a way that I don't think I'd ever been before. And could not have been, much like you. There was no way that I would have gotten to that level, especially in that short a period of time. With that said, that knocking myself out of center, my wife of 23 years saying, I want a divorce, move out, that was a catalyst in a huge way as well. So it wasn't just that the medication did it. There was outside influence in a way directing me to do it. It said, things are not as you believe and perceive that they are, so you need to take a deeper look. And the combination of all those things brought that about.
Okay, so that's great that you brought up your ex-wife, because that's something that I think is pretty big in self-awareness. So let's just take a look at, we call them either the negative symptoms or executive function deficits. And so let's just stay in that world for a minute.
Okay.
So your wife says to you, do you realize that you're impulsive? Do you realize that you're dysregulated, that you yell a lot, and you're not, okay? I'm just talking about anybody. You're just not aware of these things. So what do you do, okay? Do you just ignore what this person is saying to you? Or do you, this person who loves you, let's say your wife, your husband, do you ignore it and continue on and say, too bad, this is, I used to get this a lot. This is who I am. Take me the way I am or leave me, right? And end up not only losing that relationship, excuse me. I'm sorry. I've got that offshore. The offshore flow that brings all the stuff from the valley where you live out here to the nice ocean, and I get an allergy. You know. Anyway.
What? It sounds like you're blaming me for this.
I am. But you know, I like. You know me. I like to blame. Anyway.
Okay.
But anyway, so this person is hearing these things about their negative symptoms of ADD. They're impulsive. They procrastinate. You promised me you're going to get jobs done around the house. It never happens. And so this person is just completely ignoring what their wife or husband or coworker or whoever is saying to them, because they don't want to. That's just me. That's just the way I am. So what happens? Their whole persona for who they are kind of falls apart. They lose their marriage. They may lose their job. They may, as their children get older, stop talking to them.
If you go back to the pre-diagnosis state, because I think there's a pre and a post, and there's a fine line there where you got to go, okay, I'm going to give you an example. I remember, and this is decades ago now, we're going back to the very beginning of my marriage, within the first 3 years, we were overseas, and I remember my, this is going to sound foolish, but it's just indicative of all the things, stupid things that we do, but I remember her reading me the riot act because I did not replace the toilet paper roll or something very close to that. I remember it had something to do with the bathroom, and I thought to my, that memory has you know, endured for well over 20 years now, and I had a very similar discussion with her, saying that I don't know why I just go from thing to thing, and I overlook it. You know, I apologize, I internalized it. Carry that on for 10 years. Why did you do this? You're wrong, wrong, wrong. you know, it goes back to what you say about raising the extra child in the family, which happens to be the other adult.
Right.
In many ways, I was that individual, especially early on in our marriage. But after 20-some years, I think, in my own case where I've shared, I built up a wall to it to where I just didn't hear, feel, or listen to it anymore. This is who I am, accept it or not. And and I tried pursuing, I've got, look at my bookshelf, I've got all kinds of things that were directed at trying to figure out why my brain wasn't functioning as well as it should, like, you know, things from Dr. Amen and others. I've got a plethora of organization books. None of them did any good. So that
right.
pre-diagnosis state, we are who we are. We are doing the best we can, and we are falling short in so many ways. But at the point at which the diagnosis is made and we start making recovery, and that's ultimately what drove me to you, was I'm on my path to recovery, but it's not going well. It's not
right.
going the way it should, and I don't know how to – I'm out of my league right now. And at that point, I think it's incumbent upon the individual to really bear down and try and figure out their way and accept that we've been falling short, yet here's why. Okay, I look at this list of executive function impaired impairment within the ADHD population, the big six, activation, focus, effort, emotion, memory, and action. I had problems in all of them, and in some of them fairly severe, but without the tools to be able to cope with them, to deal with them, because the medication only does so much. It helps
right.
you to better see who you are, but you're still, it just helps you see that you're jacked up. Not,
right.
And,
so,
go ahead.
Okay, so here's what I noticed in my own walk, okay? I began to see that, you know, I had been diagnosed when I was diagnosed when I was 40. I'm going to be 60, right? So 20 years ago. But when I started my own walk 5 years ago, you know, I thought, wow, I got a great life, you know, except for the fact that my husband was having an affair. I got a great life. You know, I have two great kids. You know, I'm going to graduate school. I'm going to get my master's, and I'm going to be a therapist. And I've been a coach for 19 or however long years it was, 16, 17 years, ADD life coach. And I felt good about what I was accomplishing. But then I started to say, but wait a minute, through all this trauma that I was going through, but who am I, you know? And so I thought that, you know, my relationship with my husband and my sons, you know, that looked good on the surface. But as soon as I would discover that everything was falling apart, and a lot of it was because of the way I was communicating, and I began to see that I was not an effective communicator. My communication was very ineffective. I also began to see that I was very controlling. I also began to see that I wasn't positive. I was very negative, I thought. I always saw the glass as being half full. But here's the piece of this.
Well, just a real quick clarifying question. How long had you been on meds at this point? So going back 5 years.
I had been on meds
diagnosed.
for 15 years.
Okay, got it. 15 years.
15 years on 30 milligrams of Adderall, XR. Okay. Well, I started, I guess, the first year with regular Adderall, but it's semantics. It doesn't really matter. Anyway, but what helped me a lot in this process was, remember, I was doing a lot of things together. So I was also doing mindfulness at this time and meditation. And what I began to understand from mindfulness was that was allowed for the first time in my life to give myself loving kindness and compassion for what I was hearing about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Because in order for me to really take this all in, sit with it, process it, and make the changes that I needed to change to be the best Justine I could be, the best mother I could be. My marriage was already done, didn't matter. I needed to be able to really take it in, hear it, process it. In order to do that, I had to give myself some compassion and some loving kindness. And these steps that you and I are doing. We're working on the workbook that's going to come out, and I'm excited about this because everybody's going to be able to do this work that I've done, that you're doing and continue to do, and I continue to do every single day. But that piece of mindfulness, and we haven't really decided, like, I think we're going to probably intertwine it throughout the book because it's so important when somebody's saying something to you that is hitting your stuff or your schemas, you know, whatever you want to call it, that you're able to give yourself compassion and say, I can hear this. I really can.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm a solid person. I'm a good person. But my behaviors, from what my boys are telling me, they're destroying my relationship with them.
Oh, I get it. I was, when we were talking about, when I'd asked about the medication, it was kind of paralleling it to my own situation where I'd been on the meds for a while and I was lumbering through this, but nothing, I was starting to see more. And like I said, I was in relation to myself, I was seeing far more outside of myself than I was internally. And perception was getting better and the like, but it was that divorce. It was the, my wife on December 26, 2011, the day after Christmas, asking for the divorce. And at that point, I'd already moved out of the house. I'd been out for about a month while we were just allowing things, or so I thought, allowing things to settle day after Christmas, you know, a hell of a Christmas present. But in retrospect, I really do view it as a gift. And I harbor absolutely no resentment towards Barbara because she did what she needed to do to protect herself. And I respect that, and I respect her for it. But moreover, in my own case, it was, that was the catalyst that said for me, that told me to look internally. And in your own case, you had that same situation, different cause. And you know, you'd shared about what, in both our cases, we both happen to be controlling personalities. Go figure.
Right.
Which is why we get along so well, because we're pushing each other's buttons all the time. But I think in both our cases, we started to look at that. That's a hard thing to look at, to go, you're controlling. And we were each controlling for different reasons, but it was, in my case, definitely a protective mechanism. And I don't think I wanted to see it because that would make me have to stop doing what protected me, or at least in my mind.
Right.
And it's a difficult thing to maneuver. But the more you work, like you said, the more mindful we are as individuals about where we're at with our own feelings and external to us, with where we happen to be, and being in the moment as opposed to in the future, the past. It becomes much easier with time. And that is the other part. It does take time.
Takes a long time because, look, and I don't want to scare anybody because, you know, we're going to put this book out and we're going to ask people to come and join us so that we can teach them how to do this work. And one of the things that I did notice is that very quickly into this journey, into this process, I started to feel better. Because I recognized that I could no longer live the lie that I had been living. I could no longer continue these behaviors because they weren't going to help me have good, positive, strong relationships with people in my life. And so one of the things that I want to share with everybody is something that they can do right now, which I think would help them tremendously, is something that I did at group, and I handed out a list of the behaviors, the negative symptoms, and some of the other behaviors that can be related to codependency, that can be related just to ADHD, to emotional dysregulation, whatever you want to say. And what I did when I handed out these behaviors is I said, there was a column that said self-aware and another one that said others aware. So I'm going to read these for everybody who's listening. And then, you know, if you want to do this, this is a great exercise. So on the, you take a piece of paper and you break it down into three columns. And on the top, you write behaviors. The middle column is self-aware. The last column is others aware. So there's impulsive, forgetful, lose things, late, all the time, late, just never can show up on time, controlling, manipulative, argumentative, to be right, cannot self-soothe, defensive, low frustration tolerance, poor money management, communication issues, scattered, likes to be the victim, depressed, anxious, very critical, apologizes too much, lacks empathy, abuses alcohol or substances, which is a tough one. So I have a lot of people that say, no, I'm okay with that. It's okay that I have to drink 3 or 4 beers a night. That's fine. That's not an issue. Yeah, it is. So if you put down all these behaviors, and if you want, you can come up with more. We've got more, too, as well, but I gave you these much. Under the self-aware, you check off the ones that you have, or you could do it on a scale of 1 to 10, you know, 0 being the least, 10 being the most. So, for example, under controlling, I would have been a 10. You too, right, Chris?
Yeah, without a doubt.
Right.
And, you know,
and
me
then
well, know that.
When you hand it out to the other, you know, you can make copies of it. When it's blank, don't give it to the person after you filled it in. Give it to them without, and then what you're going to get back is pretty amazing, because you're going to see, not all the time, but most of the time, you're going to notice that there are going to be things on there from other people that you didn't check. And you're going to have to then figure out, discern, is this true? Well, if somebody else is saying it, and this is my mantra, I need to look and see, is this true? Is it really true?
And the, I'm not going to say which group. I don't want to narrow it down at all, but I will say that having done this exercise with both of them, that it's interesting to watch and listen as people go through their own self-identification and to hear what other people found in them and to hear their perception of themselves, especially early on in the journey, because and especially in two areas, self or controlling behavior and likes to be the victim. I found that just in listening that those areas seem to come up where a lot of others they will understand, they'll hit. Yeah, I'm defensive. I can be very critical or depressed. But, no, I'm not a victim. I'm not. But you look at what somebody else had checked in there for that individual and would find that, well, maybe, yes, they are,
right.
Or the controlling, because that behavior oftentimes is so difficult to see. And because it's a protective mechanism that we build inside. So I think not only do we build that protective mechanism, but then we shield it from ourselves is another layer of protection. And I personally
right.
believe that just having my own journey and the trauma that I experienced in life, that was the case, not saying it is with everybody. But
right.
being mindful of those two areas seems to be pretty important, especially if other people, you have one or two other people that agree that, yeah, that may apply to you as an individual, then maybe ask some questions to understand why they perceive that and,
mm-hmm.
and to be open to what those comments are. And that's an important point, I think, in both our journeys was to get critical information from somebody, because we, as ADD, you know, lazy, dumb, and stupid becomes our names earlier on, so we build a wall. But to be open to hearing critical, and I don't think negative, but critical feedback about who we are as individuals is critical. It's so important to that path.
Well, but it can also be, and that's why I brought up the whole mindfulness piece and the meditation, is it can also be experienced as negative. So, I mean, if there's a lot of people out there, and I think you know this, Chris, because we've seen them together, that are not self-aware. And so when you have to sit that person down and say, are you aware that you are really very much a negative person? That's going to be very difficult for them to hear that if they're not perceiving themselves as that way. So that's where the meditation and the mindfulness come into play, which gives them the ability to have compassion for themselves and be able to accept, okay, let me look at this. And what I notice is that when you bring up things to people about themselves, I know for myself, when things were being brought up to me, then I started to really pay attention. So I would notice, because one of the things in mindfulness is we need to release judgments of our thoughts, of ourselves and others. And one of the things I noticed was I was in the supermarket, and again, this was early on, and, you know, 5 years ago in my process, and I was behind this really nice old woman who had about 50 coupons. And, you know, I was in a rush, so how dare she be in front of me with all these coupons? And I was just so frustrated with the process of watching the girl separate the coupons and pick out the ones that were the right ones, and I thought I was going to go out of my mind. Like, oh my God, how could this be? And I recognized, after sharing this with somebody who I was working with at the time, and he said to me, do you see the judgments? Do you see the negative thought process, where what you could have been saying to yourself at that moment was, you know, I should really be doing this. I should go home and cut out every coupon I can find because, you know, I'm all alone right now. I was left all alone, and I'm struggling with where I'm going to get my next dollar from at this moment. And now it just happened to me the other day, and this is so funny, but I'm in the supermarket, and the exact same thing happens, and I stood and meditated for the 20 minutes while that went on. I wasn't angry. I wasn't upset. I was just in the moment thinking, gee, this is powerful.
And that brings up something that for myself, has been a powerful tool, and that is anger. In the past, look at anger and go, well, I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be this. Well, obviously, nobody wants to be angry. That's a foolish thing. But we do tend to get angry, and that introspective look at when you become angry, when, especially for me, whenever I get pissed off about something, if I'm mindful enough to stop and go, okay, what am I angry about, and how is it a reflection of me? Because 9 times out of 10, I'm projecting onto somebody my own behavior, and I'm really angry at myself. Just like your coworker had said about, well, maybe you should be cutting the coupons out. And it's guilt or something. So in that case, that it is spot on. That anger is, instead of just being something that drags us down anymore, it is a tool to help get us out of the place that we're in.
Right. No, absolutely. And I think the other piece of self-awareness, and I thought about this when I was up at Lydia Zylowska's seminar for mindfulness and meditation up in Petaluma in August, and it was just a powerful place because she's amazing. But there was a gentleman who started to get very angry about something that happened to him in his life, and I still see him up there being as angry, and I realized that there were triggers involved in this anger. And so one of the things I say to people that I work with, whether it's in the group or privately, is, look, when this anger starts to come up, you're going to have to really start to identify from a self-aware place, what are the triggers that are causing this anger, where are they from, and I need to release these triggers. I need to identify them and release them. And this is all part of the workbook and part of the process we're doing, but the triggers, as I'm sure you'll agree with, are a big part of this.
Yes. So, and it goes back to that anger points to something. And so you kind of filled in the rest. I didn't think about it, but when that anger comes up, it's pointing to something. And oftentimes it, for me still, it becomes an issue of control. If I find I'm not in control of something and I get frustrated, or a good example that you'd already pointed out, being in that line and not being able to control the speed at which it's moving is very frustrating. And it can be at any point in time in life. But understanding that, and then going back to the discussions you've had about schemas, understanding where it originates from, is so beneficial. But
right.
I don't think I've ever really written my list of triggers down to identify them. I know what they are off the top of my head, but it would be helpful to have those, I guess, you know, very close at hand to go, okay, which one of these buttons just got pushed? And if I can't identify it, do I need a new button? Is there something else out there that maybe...
Yeah, I also think that the triggers are related to the schemas. So for those of you who are listening who don't know what a schema is, it's a collection of thoughts that originate in childhood, adolescent, or early adulthood. Now, and here's the other piece of it. As we get older, even make our own schemas. You know, there's 18 maladaptive schemas that Jeffrey Young, who's a psychologist, identified years ago. And these are the part of the process that we're going to be doing in the workbook. And I noticed that I had just about all 18 of them when I started. And in being able to really look at those and identify them, those are where the triggers come from most of the time. The triggers can also be from the schemas that we're starting to create related to our life in the moment that may not be beneficial schemas. They are, you know, negative schemas related to the negatives we've heard our whole life growing up. Like, my name was lazy, stupid, and procrastinator. So that's very difficult.
That's a good point about how, because oftentimes we talk about the schemas and it's the early maladaptive schemas, but the reality is that they can be formed later in life. And as I've shared with you, I've developed sensitivities in areas specific to personal relationships with people that were starting to, and I probably, if I continued down that path, would have developed adulthood schemas, negative or maladaptive schemas, which, you know, great. So the 16 that I already had weren't enough. I need to finish filling in and maybe make up some more. Which nobody wants, but it's mindfulness and being aware of who you are. That self-awareness is so important.
Oh, it's paramount in getting better. To me, you know, I know we're playing with this whole idea of mindfulness, self-awareness, but to me, that first step of saying, you think I'm controlling? Gee, okay, am I controlling? Am I really controlling? Having to sit with that and think about that, and then all of a sudden recognizing, oh my God, I am, was very freeing in a lot of ways. It was difficult because I had to admit that I was doing things that I said other people in my life did and I didn't. Oh, no, I was doing them as well. And I had to look at that, and I had to, the only way I can change a behavior is if I know I have it. If I don't identify the behavior, no matter what it is, it can be, you know, the negative symptoms or the executive function deficits, it can be other things, it can be codependent behavior. The only way I can change a behavior is if I'm aware of the behavior.
The you brought up the point of thought was there, and I'm trying to keep from losing it. I was listening to you, and I lost the thought. But with the behavior. In my case, it was, and I believe I've brought this up in past talks we've had, but the having my therapist especially point out controlling behaviors for yourself and then providing examples. So to go, well, you're controlling is one thing. To go, you're controlling because you withhold information from other people, thus not giving them all the information to make a decision. Oh, yeah. And that in that case, that was one of the things my therapist told me, and I didn't buy it right off. I went, I don't think that's controlling. And it wasn't for, you know, maybe a week or two after that had set, and I thought it through and went, well, if had that been me, had somebody not told me something, and then I made a decision or wasn't even allowed to make a decision because of that, would I feel that I was being controlled? Oh, my God, yeah, I would. So
right.
that was extremely helpful to have the behavior described to me in detail so that I could identify it.
That's a very good point, because when I was told by people in my life that I was controlling, they explained to me, they gave me examples of
mm-hmm.
how I was controlling. Like my children explained to me that I would have a tone in my voice when I wanted them to agree with me that I never even realized that that tone was there. But that's a really good point, is being able to maybe give some examples. You know, you're manipulating. Well, let me give you an example of what I mean by that. You go on to explain to them what it is so that they can be more effective in being able to point out to you, this is manipulating. This is what
mm-hmm.
I mean by controlling. You know, this is what I mean by you're impulsive. You know, you just ran out of here the other day on your motorcycle without your helmet. That's dangerous. That's impulsivity. That's not thinking before you do something. So, yeah, that's a very good point.
Well, I was going to just add on to something that you'd already shared with the group, that you had read out that list of the negative symptoms or behaviors. It might be helpful for those who are going to fill that list out, if they do give it to somebody else and say, you know, please fill this out and identify those things, maybe have them cite an example next to each one of them so
yep.
that it's not just you're getting a checkbox going, I'm controlling, but I'm getting a checkbox that says, well, and here's why, maybe a short sentence
right.
for each one that explains and gives a little insight into that individual, as opposed to them just pick maybe just, which would feel like just being poked at or jabbed. No, they're not
right.
jabbing. They're taking the time to identify and write out what they see in the hopes of maybe helping the individual.
Right. And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking to myself, too, you know, with the mindfulness and the compassion and all that, I think maybe part of the list should also be some positive things in there. You're kind. You're loving. You know, at most of us, you know, there are sociopaths out there. But for the most part, at our core, and this is what I say to couples that I work with, when one has ADD and the other one doesn't, and the one without ADD is feeling very angry for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say, you know, at your husband or your wife's core, these are really, really good people. What you're experiencing are behaviors that are separate of this person. And so that's something that I think maybe should be on the list, too, is positive things, you know?
That's a good idea.
At my core, I'm a loving person. I'm a caring person, you know? Most very controlling people are usually very loving, caring people. They just want to control the outcome of things for a lot of different reasons.
Right.
So I think doing that as well can help you having to look at, okay, I'm controlling, but I'm also, this person thinks I'm kind. This
it gives a more
well-rounded
view of that of the individual, as opposed to here's all your negative traits. Oh, great!
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. So for those of you who are listening, it'd be a good idea if you intersperse some of those positive things in there, like I'm kind, I'm loving, I'm sensitive, I'm generous, whatever it is that are positive traits about yourself that you want to write, you know, just make, add them to the list and give them to the other person. And you know what? I'm almost positive that they're going to see all those things about you. If they're not so close, they can't see them. You know, that's the part of it that's scary too, because I see a lot in husband and wives, and especially those who have been married for a long, long time, and the person without ADD has a lot of complaints because their needs aren't getting met. You know, I was supposed to have that garage finished, cleaned up 2 years ago, and it's not done. So it kind of like the negative paramounts takes over any of the positives. And that's the sad part, because these are really fine, creative. Put creative on the list, you know. Put down whatever you are, artist, musician, whatever. These are all wonderful people who are out-of-the-box thinkers that many of us are misunderstood, because what gets highlighted to us all the time is that negative stuff that we need to look at. We need to look at that in order to change. But I think for the compassion and the loving kindness, the positives need to be intertwined in there as well.
Amen.
Yes. Yeah. So the trigger part of this whole thing is a big part of getting better, being able to identify the triggers.
Right. Go ahead.
You know, the producer, who I think you know is my husband,
yes.
He just had a great idea. Maybe, Chris, since you're the person who's just so structured when it comes to this kind of stuff, we should put together a sample list and post it on my website.
Oh, my God. No kidding. I was thinking the same thing, because as we were talking, I'm looking at the form, and I added the positive. And you
said
creative, so that's what I added. And I was thinking, well, maybe you ought to put this on maybe the Miss ADD website or some other venue. But I thought, well, I'll talk to you offline about it. But since the executive producer's already on board, I'm just following orders now. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Three bags full.
Yeah, so
sure,
I think we're going to do that. For everybody who's listening, Chris is going to make up the list, and then I'm going to have my website person post it on my website, and I'll let everybody know on Facebook, because that's usually who listens to this, and on my website, like where it's going to be. It'll probably be on the first page of the website, so everybody can see it and print it off. We'll figure it out.
A Miss ADD freebie.
A Miss ADD freebie, yes. And then everybody can know that the rest and the best is yet to come, which is the whole workbook, which we're excited about. So,
very
it's a great
excited
idea.
About.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's
going to be very helpful for
producer.
Everybody. It's the executive producer. Thank you. Yes, because, yeah, it'll be great. We'll get some feedback from people and see how they feel about it, which is great, too. And that's what we're here for. We're here to help everybody get better and feel good about themselves. That's what this is all about. So give yourself some loving kindness and compassion. You know, as all of you are going through this list after we post it, and you hand it out to other people, and start the whole meditation process, because that's an important piece of this as well.
And key to underlying all of this is change is possible. It's the beauty. It's not that here's a list of, you know, good and bad, and there's a lot of bad checked and maybe not so much good. But even if there is, nobody is stuck in the position that they're at. Everybody can make a change, can decide to change. And Justine and I are just a few examples, two examples. There are many others that we both know collectively, and I know Justine knows a lot more, who've made significant changes in their life. Anybody can do it if they decide they want to.
Yes. And let me just say this other thing. I think this is important. For this list that we're going to post, if you give it to somebody that you love and they don't check one positive thing, either you need some help, so you need to reach out. You can reach out to me I'm here if anybody needs any help. You know how to get in touch with me. On my website, on Facebook, however you want to do it. Or if you're not in the L.A. area and you don't want to do Skyping or over the phone, then I would suggest you go find yourself a good counselor. Because something, if this is your significant other, and I think you'd agree with this, Chris, then something needs to change. Something's not right.
And to that end, I was thinking about this. We'll identify some positive traits. The list is not going to be inclusive. So if you think there's a positive trait that you have, there will be blank spaces in which you can pencil something in.
Great.
Because we may overlook something, and 10 that we pick don't happen to apply, but there's other things that do. So that I guess it goes back to, I don't guess, it does go back to getting a more comprehensive look at who we are as individuals. That's
right.
A good point. There should be
right.
A mix of both.
Right. So this is exciting. We're going to get this done. I promise you by the time we're back on the air next week, we'll have this posted on the website. We'll figure out a way to do it so you can print it off. I'm not a techie person, so I can't do that, but the person who works for me is. So we'll figure this out. We'll get this going, and I'm excited about it.
The one thing I will say up front is just real quickly is that it's going to be a PDF file. So in the meantime, for those that don't have PDF viewers, if you know where to go to get it. We'll, if not, we'll identify it, but it's Adobe. And
okay.
And that's all I got.
That's pretty easy to get, Adobe, right?
Yes, it is. It's
okay.
There's a lot of free readers out there for it.
Okay. Okay, that's great. Hey, Chris, thank you so much again for being on the show. We're going to come up with some more shows for Chris and I to be on together. And, you know, these are all about everybody getting better and feeling good about yourself and just understanding that ADHD is truly a gift. I mean, that's how I ended up seeing it, why I published that book that I published, because I wanted everybody to understand there are so many people out there with this gift, and I want everybody who's listening to feel that way. In order to do that, you got to do this, and that's where when we get all these pieces together, and we're coming along on this book. It's going to be great. I'm really excited about it. So we'll talk in a little while, Chris, off air, so we can get this list going, but thank you so much for being on the show. I'm going to sign
thanks
off with you
for,
and say goodbye.
For inviting me back, and thanks again for what you do for all of us within the community. It's greatly appreciated. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Thanks, Steve, for your input and ideas.
I'll tell them. Thanks, Chris.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. And for those of you who are still listening, thank you so much for being a part of this show. I promise we'll get that list up on the website so all of you can participate. And I would also love it if after you print the list off that you possibly give me some feedback on what transpired after you used it. That would be great for me and for Chris as well. So again, I want to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back next week. I'm not sure yet what the topic is going to be, but we will let you know during the week on Facebook. And I want to remind everybody about the two groups, one in Torrance, one in Culver City. They're both CHAD adult ADHD groups. And again, please, everyone, stay in the moment. Thanks.